Welcome back to another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. We have a little bit of normality today. I'm joined again by one of the OGs, Jordan Sullivan. Welcome back to Australia.
Thanks, Loz. Good to be back.
Yes, always good to have you back. I mean, I did enjoy doing a couple of eps with Dojo and Jack while you were gone, just to shake things up because, you know, sometimes it can get a little bit stale, hey, when you're just always talking to each other.
I think what I want to do in the future, and if you're listening to this and you guys want to do this, is I want to do segments. I think everyone has like a very unique tone. And if you guys are listening to this on the YouTubers definitely pick up on this way more than our crowd on Spotify and Apple Music and everything else. They definitely have, everyone has like a certain audience that they're talking to on YouTube. So I think we should definitely segment it up and do certain segments with Loz, Dojo and Jack.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I think I'm keen for anything. And I suppose new year, new system coming up. But anyway, let's focus on what we're going to be talking about today. So what we're going to be talking about today, just a brief episode talking about calories, pretty much what a calorie is, and calorie counting, because I know you probably get so many questions every week, Geordie, on your Q&A. You know, how many calories should I be having? I'm a 5 foot person, weigh this many pounds, train this many times a week. What are my calories? You know, as if you're a computer and you can just give them bam, magic number. But I think today we'll just kind of step through that process and also highlight how, yes, of course, calories are there for a reason, but also it's not as kind of finicky as it needs to be, and also just all the different factors that can determine someone's energy requirements.
Yeah, people get really caught up when they talk about calories, like as if it's this hard and fast gospel truth. And if you don't get the exact number right down to the decimal point, that the system or whatever you're trying to achieve is just absolutely going to implode. And it's not the case. And I think the more people you talk to that have really, really in-depth understanding of nutrition science, I'm not saying the less important calories are. Calories are always important. You can't be one of those people that denies calories or be a calorie denier. That's denying the laws of thermodynamics and how our universe is governed. So you can't do that. Calories absolutely exist. Like the food we eat absolutely contain calories. Our body absolutely needs calories to function and to live. But like we're going to talk about today, we're going to go through why it's such murky waters when you go swimming in there. Like, why is it so hard just to get a number to figure it out? And really, what can you do? And what does it make it? Why does it make it so difficult when we try to calculate this? When Loz goes to me, hey, Geordie, how many calories do I need? And I go, oh, maybe this much. And that's probably the best answer that you're going to get until you go and do it. So we'll go through all of that today. I think the best way to start, energy expenditure. Let's talk about what it is and how you actually measure calories, because this is something that a lot of people don't know. A lot of people don't know, how do we actually measure them?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, a calorie, we always think about calorie, diet, food, oh my gosh, this, that, and the other. But the calorie is a form of energy. So it's a unit of energy. So 1 kilojoule or 1 calorie, it's actually a unit of energy. And obviously in the context of humans, we eat calories or kilojoules because we need energy to survive. And I remember that, I think back when I first started on my Instagram, I made this post about energy expenditure, and so many people just think that energy expenditure is what we expend doing exercise. However, when you break it down, we actually expend energy through so many other ways. For example, literally just laying in bed, our body constantly needs energy to function 24/7. And that's what they'll refer to as, you know, basal metabolic rate. And we'll go over that shortly. But I think, you know, if we're talking about energy and human energy expenditure before we kind of measure our energy expenditure, it's important to understand that it's not just the energy that we burn during exercise. That is one component, but the largest component of energy that we burn is just from our body at rest, in terms of using energy every second of the day to stay alive. We've also got things such as thermic effect of food. So especially with protein, our body does use a little bit of energy to digest it. We've got non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So that doesn't necessarily mean exercise from going for a run. It could be calories burned from going for a walk or just walking over to the fridge or, you know, whatever you're doing in your free time that isn't necessarily a sport. So we do have different avenues of energy expenditure, and, you know, you don't have to count your calories. That's not what this episode is about, but it's just helping you to have a better understanding of, okay, what is a calorie? How are we burning them? Where all of this energy going? But, you know, in terms of how do we measure energy expenditure, it can be determined a few different ways. So we've got one in a lab via calorimetry. I think I always say that wrong ever since university, or through predictive equations that we're going to go through both of those. So one way that we can measure energy expenditure is through direct calorimetry. And that ultimately uses a big box, really, where the human sits in there, and it measures the heat produced by the body. However, this obviously isn't accessible or realistic or financially accessible for most people because it's time consuming. I don't know personally anyone that's ever done it, but of course that's where we're going to get the most accurate example of how many calories someone burns. However, what commonly is done because it's more accessible is we use a variety of different predictive equations, which we'll talk about.
I think two things I want to touch on real quickly before we get going. Yeah, the direct calorimetry is extremely sophisticated and complex. I remember seeing it at university. I think I was in, must have been my undergrad. I don't think I saw this in my master. It would have been my undergrad where they were doing it with rats and mice. And so obviously to keep a human in a box, you probably need a pretty big box, like the size of my office, right? And you're pretty much measuring all of the gases that come in and out, because when we breathe and we metabolize in our body, we breathe in oxygen, we breathe out certain gases in a predictable fashion. And by measuring the amount of those gases, we can get a good understanding of how much energy we've burnt in that amount of time. Very, very difficult to do with humans. It can be done. Like it is absolutely can be done. You see it a lot in more like rodent studies, because obviously it's a smaller box and you can control it a lot more. It's very labor intensive, and you're probably never, ever going to practically ever be able to do it. Like it's so, so, so expensive and just not accessible. What is really accessible are these predictive equations that use that information from the data we get from this indirect calorimetry, and they use that to extrapolate predictive equations we can use for certain populations, say for males or females. And we use other indications such as height, weight, you know, some of them use body composition to try and get a better estimate based on these things. And just before I move on, I want to make the note that we're talking about energy in terms of calories. You'll also hear it called kilojoules. And a lot, when we go through university, we're always taught in kilojoules. Calories, kilojoules are very interchangeable. If you're in engineering, you always talk, or physics or whatever, you always talk in terms of kilojoules or joules in energy. So when we're talking about all of this, it's just a unit of energy. So that's very, very important. And we can talk about, we don't need specific numbers, but one calorie is equal to 4 kilojoules of energy. So if you ever hear this or you hear them being used interchangeably, they are the same thing. We're talking about the same use. It's just different language that we're using. So let's go through it. I think it's important to talk about these predictive equations, because my clients, mostly when we talk about it, most of them have heard about predictive equations. I don't know about you, Loz, but most of them have a kind of a good idea, like, oh yeah, there was this equation, I put it into Google and I kind of just put my height and weight and something popped out. But understanding what is breaking down into those equations is important. And then, okay, like let's go through and look at this, because I personally have a way that's far, far, far easier that we'll discuss at the end of the podcast, and I'll discuss why I like it. But let's go through these equations, a few of the popular ones that you'll see when you slap in how many calories do I need into Dr. Google.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to cover. And I think, yeah, depending on also how you're getting that number, you might go onto a website and it doesn't even give you the equation. You just enter your age, height, weight, whatever, and it just spits out a number. So you don't even know what equation they're putting it through. However, if you do have the awareness, or after listening to this, you have the awareness of what different equations are out there, it might help you to better pick a calorie calculator that you want to use online. But yeah, there are quite a few out there. We've just picked a couple of the most common ones to talk about today. So one of the first ones is called the Harris-Benedict equation, and ultimately it's one of the most widely used predictive equations to estimate someone's basal metabolic rate. And this equation generally takes into consideration common measures such as age, body weight, height. However, it doesn't obviously factor in someone's race or body composition. So that's a huge one, especially for us working with athletes. Body composition can really heavily influence someone's energy expenditure, because fat-free mass, so things such as muscle, is a lot more energetic than, say, fat. And, you know, people always say, oh, 1 kilo of fat weighs more than a kilo of muscle, but a kilo of something is the same as a kilo of something else. Can't change that. But a kilo of muscle is going to be a lot more it requires a lot more energy to sustain life than a kilo of fat. So someone's body composition can largely influence what their basal metabolic rate might be. And some of these equations, such as the Harris-Benedict equation, doesn't take into account body composition. So as such, it's not a very accurate indicator for athletes, and also for obese individuals as well.
Yeah, it's a very similar train of thought when we look at BMI, right? Like BMI, you can get into some pretty heated debates about the usefulness of BMI, but it's the same argument, right? It's the same argument where you're using two measures, your height and weight, to try and get a predictive outcome of someone's health that doesn't take into account all these other things. So, and we all know it, like we work with athletes and you always see the big meathead guys in the gym who, you know, absolutely next to no body fat, and they probably are quite healthy. There are, you can be like that and not be healthy, but there are a lot of guys that are healthy, but their BMI will be huge. And you're like, well, that doesn't really work out. And that's really the biggest criticism of the Harris Benedict. It just doesn't take into account that body composition. So when you're in the world we work in with athletes, it's always a bit like, oh yeah, how appropriate is this thing?
Definitely, yeah. And I suppose the next two that I'm going to mention are along the similar lines in terms of they also don't account for body composition. But another one is called the Mifflin-St. Joe. Not sure how you pronounce that. Not sure what nationality that is. I'm not sure. But anyway, this equation is used more so in obese populations. However, it's still generally accurate in non-obese populations, but that's just a slightly different equation that's used for heavier individuals. We've also got the Schofield equation, which again used for measuring BMR in adults, and this has different equations based on the ages, so varying from 18 to 30 years of age, 30 to 60, and then over 60. So not that we should necessarily be telling our kids how many calories to have, but the Schofield equation isn't typically used on adolescents as it's built for adults. But I suppose that brings us to the Cunningham equation, which for our population or our target audience mostly is a little bit more applicable, because this one does actually factor in fat-free mass. So whereas the other ones don't really take into account body composition, the Cunningham equation does consider fat-free mass, so lean mass, pretty much any mass in the body that isn't fat, so that's bones, water, organs, muscle, all those types of things. And yeah, I think this is probably one of the most applicable. What do you think, Geordie?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Cunningham equation. I do have a lot of bias because of what we do, you know, in combat sports especially. And a lot of my mentors that have helped me develop my practice over the years, people like Dr. Carl Lang and Evans, they wrote, you know, the marquee paper in this sport, Make Your Weight in Combat Sports, back in 2011. And they referenced the Cunningham equation in that, you know, continuously. So I've always used that in my practice. And, you know, we further have used the Cunningham equation when we're looking at things like low energy availability and we're trying to find out states of metabolism. What I mean by that is when we say hypometabolic or hyper, if you've got a lower metabolism than the population average, we usually use things like the Cunningham equation, especially with athletes, because it's a bit more designed for catering to athletic populations because it considers our body composition. So I'm a big fan of the Cunningham equation. The obvious downside to the Cunningham is that you have to be able to access something to tell you what your body composition is, which in reality isn't always that easy. I think we can kind of laugh at that where we sit from in our little seat of privilege and, you know, our world where we can go down to a gym and even get a body scan, or we can get a pretty, you know, sophisticated DEXA or find someone who can do body caliper analysis on us. But, you know, I've worked with lots of people in Thailand where none of that is accessible. That's just not accessible at all. So it's like, well, what do you do with those guys? That's where the Cunningham equation has its downsides.
Yeah, definitely. And all equations, they all have their downsides, and, you know, none of them are accurate or none of them are going to be able to give you that perfect number. All of these things are simply, you know, giving you a guide. And that's why they're called predictive or estimations. However, yeah, you're so true in terms of, okay, well, that's great, but how do I measure my fat-free mass? Because, you know, some people maybe have those bathroom scales that will tell you, you know, what their body composition is. But again, then it's like, okay, how accurate are these measurements? We could probably do an episode, Geordie, on, you know, the different types of body composition analysis tools could be a good one, because again, you know, same as the calculations are never 100% accurate, neither are those different types of body composition methods. So again, just reiterating that these are obviously just providing a general kind of ballpark figure, but yeah, again, I think something that none of these take into account is also things such as your metabolism or, you know, maybe medical conditions, your genetics, race, all of those types of things as well, because as we're aware, all of those can greatly influence our body composition or our metabolism. And, you know, it's so true with that quote or that saying that says, you know, if 100 people ate the exact same and followed the exact same exercise program, they would all look and or weigh different to each other. And that's because we all respond differently to different stimulus. So yeah, obviously all of these equations, great to give you a bit of a ballpark figure, but, you know, they don't take into account those deeper things that we can't quite measure or input into a calculation.
Yeah. And that's the point you want to hammer home here, right? Is that when we get people coming to us and they say, you know what, how many calories do I eat? Loz, how many calories do I eat? Geordie, I've been trying all these things. I just can't get it right. Give me my calories. Bang on. I want my calories. It's like, we don't know. Like, we don't know unless you have access to someone who can do, you know, direct calorimetry and we can go see that. But what we can do is we can use these predictive equations. We can pick the predictive equation that we think best suits you and your lifestyle and everything else. And then we can get, like Laura said, a ballpark figure. We can get a ballpark figure, and then we're going to have to try that figure out in the real world and see how your body responds and then make adjustments to it. And I think that's something that's a pill that a lot of people don't like to swallow. And I can completely understand it. I can completely understand, especially when I was a younger practitioner and I didn't have the experience that I have today, where you've seen, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of different clients where you can look at them and you can talk to them and you can understand their body and understand their metabolism and look at their body composition and go, I know exactly what equation is going to work for you. And I'm very, very confident that that number that we just got from that equation is pretty accurate. And if you eat that, you'll either maintain, put on, or lose weight. It's very frustrating when you don't have that bank of knowledge in the back of your head. So I very, 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 very much sympathize with people who get incredibly frustrated with it. But the fact of the matter is, that's the reality. The reality is that that's a ballpark figure and it may not work for you. And the other thing that other people don't like to hear is that when we talk about our calories, it's really a sliding scale. It's a sliding scale, and we'll talk about one of the biggest things that influences scale, which is your daily activity, is that your maintenance calories may be set here, but your calorie needs for a day will alter depending on what you're doing. It'll drastically alter. So one day you may need to eat X amount of calories, but the next day you may need to have 400 or 500 more based on what you're doing. And then this is where it gets even more complicated, because you go, oh, okay, cool. I'm quite an active guy. Most people listening to this are going to go, oh, you know, I work out once or maybe even twice a day, most days of the week. How do I take that into account? And then you can really see how this gets messy and these waters get really murky when we talk about factoring in that activity into these equations.
Definitely. And I think, as I mentioned at the start, you know, our basal metabolic rate takes up the largest chunk of our daily energy expenditure, but our exercise and our activity levels is probably the most variable day to day in terms of how much energy we're expending. So I think, just to give everyone an idea listening, we should step through, you know, what maybe a physical activity factor would be. So obviously we've stepped through a couple of those equations and explained that this is what's going to give you a ballpark figure as to what your resting metabolic rate or your resting kind of maintenance calories would be. But for, yeah, most people, largely everyone listening to this, they're going to exercise. So this is where we need to then incorporate a physical activity factor. So this is where our basal metabolic rate, whatever number we've gotten, say it's 1,000, just purely because it's an easy number, you're then going to go and multiply that by a factor to try and kind of account for that exercise that you're doing. So this is a table that I pulled from a journal article that described predictive equations and then also the physical activity factor. So we go from very light to heavy. So as an example of what very light activity factor would be is seated and standing activities, office work, driving, cooking, no vigorous activity. So then we're going to times our metabolic rate by 1.2 to 1.3. Next, we've got low active. So in addition to the activities of a sedentary lifestyle, 30 minutes of moderate activity equivalent to walking 3 kilometers in 30 minutes. Most office workers with additional planned exercise routines is about 1.5 to 1.6. And then we're moving up to active. So in addition to the activities of a low active lifestyle, an additional 3 hours of activities such as cycling 16 to 19 kilometers, very specific, an hour, or walking 7Ks an hour, up to about 1.6 to 1.7 times that BMR. And then we've got heavy activities. So this is planned vigorous activities, physical labor, full-time athletes, hard labor professions, such as tradesmen, is up to about a 1.9 to 2.1. So depending on where you look, these physical activity factors do vary slightly. However, that's just purely to give you an idea of, you know, what the different categories of activity would be. And I think you kind of alluded to it earlier, Geordie, you might train once a day or twice a day every day, which is awesome. But if you're just sitting at a desk doing absolutely nothing for the rest of the day, you know, it's not like you've necessarily got a super heavy, you know, energy output. Of course, all of these things within reason and totally individualized, but it is a bit of a refresher in terms of, okay, yep, I sit at a desk job, blah, 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 all the time. But hey, I go for a, you know, 30-minute jog every day. You're probably actually a bit lighter on the activity level than you would think, or maybe the other opposite end of the spectrum, you think it doesn't contribute at all to your energy expenditure, but it is still additional exercise to our basic metabolic needs.
Yeah. And I think as Loz is talking this through, so as she's gone through all of these things, the way that these physical activity factors or physical activity levels whatever you want to call them, work, is that you use one of the predictive equations, bang, you get that, say, 1800 calories, and then you multiply that by whatever category you think fits your lifestyle best. So if you think you're very light, low active, active, or heavy, if you're very light, you'll times it by 1.2 to 1.3. Low active, you times it by 1.5, 1.6. Active, 1.6 to 1.7. Heavy, 1.9 to 2.1. And then so you take that baseline 1800 and times it by whatever number you think fits. And if you're listening to this and you're sitting there and you're thinking, what the F, like, this sounds so confusing. This sounds very, very out there and very non-specific. You are absolutely right. Like, you are absolutely 100,000% right. This is why it's so difficult. This is why it's so difficult to get your calories bang on. Okay, first time, if you don't have all that experience like I was talking about and you're trying to do it with, you know, Google and these online calculators and using physical activity factors, and then you get a number and then you go try and use it in real life and it doesn't work. You can see why, because there's just so much ambiguity in every step of this process. Does the predictive equation I'm using even suit me? Is that the best one for me? Is that number even accurate? So is my baseline that I'm starting here, is that accurate? And then if I'm trying to figure out what my activity level, have I picked the right group? Have I timed it by too much, too little? There's just so much room for error here. And I can completely sympathize with why it's so frustrating.
Definitely. And I think calorie calculating or estimating your calories, whatever, it's as simple or as complicated as you make it. And yeah, as much as I love being a dietitian and I love, part of me does love, you know, when I'm at a social occasion and someone asks me a question, like, you know, something funny. I love answering those questions, but something that I hate is when someone says, oh yeah, you're a dietitian, how many calories should I have? Because I just think, oh, you know, there's so many other things as well that we should be focusing on before we just talk about calories. Because if you want to really go about talking about estimating your requirements, it's not just about your total calories, but then it's about your protein and your fat and your carbohydrate intake as well. So it's like, some people I think that want to know this data are so hyper fixed on just meeting that calorie number. You know, they don't really care what their diet consists of. They just need to hit that number. And, you know, that's not what we're about here is, you know, it's not always about just eating food for the calorie content. Obviously food is so much more than just the calories that's in it. But for a lot of people, being able to track their calories or to have something to go off is a really helpful technique for them to stay on track or to reach their goals. But as you just said, Geordie, this whole thing is quite confusing and it can be really hard to do it on your own because you got different calculators, different websites everywhere. You got different people telling you different things. And I think if you're struggling and it's all too much, you know, you just need a dietitian that can help you with that and do it for you. But yeah, I'm grateful that I'm past those days of wanting to know how many calories I also eat in a day because it's exhausting.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But I know the people listening to this are going to be rocking back and forth in their chair and being like, all right, like, where's the punchline? Tell me how much I eat. So I'm going to give you a number, and I'm not going to give you a number from any of those equations because I've ripped my hair out for years and years and years trying to figure out which one's the best. I will stand by the Cunningham equation. I do like that, but I appreciate it's not always accessible to everyone. So an equation that I came up with, and this came from when I used to work on the oncology ward when I was a master's student, is that we had what was called a hypermetabolic equation. And it was very, very simple because we used it because we just needed a quick calculation to work out how much to give our palliative care patients. Obviously, time is of the essence with those guys. And I found that this works really well with an athletic population, and it usually overestimates a little bit. And I'd always prefer to overestimate the calories that you need rather than underestimate it. And it's super, super simple. And all it is that you take your body weight and you times it by either 125 kilojoules, if that's the system you're working in, or 31.25 calories. And that gives you your basic. That gives your basic baseline calories there. So if you're listening to this, do it. And I found that it's pretty consistent with all of the other ones. It's just way less messing around, way less messing around. It's a super simple equation. Yeah, and there's a few other things that I can do, and I'll do another podcast where we talk about, you can just use that and use different numbers to account for your activity levels. But as your baseline, take your weight in kilograms. So take your weight in kilograms, kgs, times it by 31.25, and use that as your baseline amount of calories. Now, obviously, if you're an active person, you're going to have to eat more to account for all of the activity, but just use that. I would even encourage you, spend a day or two eating at that number. You're obviously going to be in a deficit if you're training. And then you'll feel like, and you go, oh man, like, I feel quite crap today. And that's completely normal because you're in a deficit. So bump up that number by 500 calories. How do you feel that next day? Bump it up by another 500. Oh, I actually feel all right. You know what? I feel pretty good at training. I'm not too lethargic throughout the day. You'll probably then getting close to what we call your maintenance zone. And that's the only other thing that I want to mention before we keep chewing everyone's ear off, is that you have zones for these. You have a deficit zone. It's not a hard, fast number that you eat 1700 calories, you're going to lose weight. In reality, it could be between 1600 and 1800, you'll lose weight. Same with your maintenance, could be between 1800 and 2000. And being in a surplus could be between 1900, 2200. You just need to play the long game, trial and error. And this is where, you know, tracking your calories, as much as we're not a big fan of it, it is useful. You can learn to understand what's in your food. You can figure out, okay, my maintenance zone is between 2,000 and 2,200 calories, and I feel pretty good there. So next time I want to go on a deficit, I'll just drop down into 1,900 calories. Or when I, you know, watch some bodybuilding show and I want to get super, you know, meated up, I'm going to go to 2,500 calories and see how I feel. But that, if you take anything away and you want to figure out how you work out your calories, start there. Start at that baseline and then have a play around with it.
And there you have it, the Jordan Sullivan equation that is not yet included in any journal article.
Yeah, and I have put that thing up on Instagram and everyone was asking me. There's actually a bit more to that. I've actually done quite a bit of deductive maths to see if that plays out. And it does work out pretty closely to a lot of the other predictive equations. Obviously, if you're, like Law said, if you're a serious athlete and you say you got to make weight, I probably wouldn't recommend just playing the guesswork and wasting weeks and weeks, if not months, figuring out where these zones are. But if you're just an everyday person like me and Loz, and you're just chilling out and you've got the time and you've got the means to play around with this, then absolutely do it. Or like Loz said, if you want to save the time and hassle, really, that's why you go and pay for a dietitian. That's what you do us, because we have these banks of knowledge where we've literally seen thousands and thousands of different athletes. And we'll probably know just by looking at you and talking to you how many calories you need before we even do any of these maths. So it just saves you a whole lot of time and money.
Absolutely. Yeah. So either you're going to listen to this and think, okay, I do need a dietitian, or I never need a dietitian again.
Yeah. And you know what? Some people can absolutely nail this. Like, I've had clients come in and they're just like, hey, I think I need this many calories, I've worked out this. And then I'll just turn around to them and say, yeah, you're right. They go, what? And then like Loz said, then there's a whole lot more to it when we talk about diet quality, but I'm going to call it there, because that is a very good one in a nutshell. You guys now understand what a calorie is, interchangeable with kilojoules. You understand the different types of calorie equations, what you can do with the physical activity levels and how you can multiply your baseline to get a good gauge. And more importantly, you understand that it's just extremely confusing. There's so much room for error in this. There's so much ambiguity when it comes into it. And the best way to do it is to keep it simple, put it into practice in the real world, and then adjust depending on your goals.
Great summary. Now, thanks for the chat, Jordy. And for anyone listening that maybe has some more questions, you know where to find us on socials, Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, everywhere. Send us a message and we'll speak to you next time.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. If you like this episode and you enjoy our content, then you'll absolutely love our new TFD Performance Hub. Our first course on the Hub is the Performance Nutrition for BJJ course, which is perfect for grapplers looking to master their nutrition. And if you follow the link in the description, you can even snag 40% off that course. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, and YouTube. And if you follow along our socials at @the_fightdietitian, you'll see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.